This is Keeping It 101, a Killjoy's Introduction to Religion podcast. In 2022-2023, our work is made possible through both a UVM Reach grant and a Loose AAR Advancing Public Scholarship grant. We're grateful to live, teach, and record on the current ancestral and unceded lands of the Abenaki, Wabanaki, and Akwesasko peoples. As always, you can find material ways to support Indigenous communities on our website.
Yeah, you can. What's up, nerds? Hi, hello. I'm Megan Goodwin, a scholar of American religions, race, gender, and politics.
Hi, hello. I'm Elise Morgenstein First, a historian of religion, Islam, race and racialization, and South Asia. Megan?
I need to say out loud that I'm just bracing my entire soul for this conversation because I know that I'm not ready, but I don't know how to get ready for it.
Now I want to do like, are you ready for this? I want to play every fucking jock jam in my soul for you from the 90s till today. What can we do? How do we get it done? We are doing sports.
Yeah, we are.
Today's episode, Megan, is in Incorrect.
Incorrect.
Where we kindly but firmly insist that religion does more and different work than our nerds might think it does. Because on today, we are challenging some basic assumptions about sports.
We're going to talk about sports.
Specifically, the idea that sports are secular and have nothing to teach us or tell us about religion.
So, all right, I'm going to ask this question because it's the only way we're getting through this episode. Hey, Elise, you care a lot about sports. What do folks get incorrect when it comes to sports and religion?
So much, Megan.
I know.
So much. But I'm going to limit it. And you know what? I'm even limiting it to two things. Not even
wow.
three.
Wow. Damn.
Certainly not four. Five is right out. Two things.
Two shall be the name of the counting.
I think there's two things that are incorrect about how folks think about sports. Number one, sports, including the play of sports as well as the spectatorship, include so many elements and religious practice. Period.
That's true. That's fair. Okay.
And number two, and I know you were mad that I said, yo, we got to do some sports. So I'm going to give you something that I don't ever give you. I'm going to give you the United States.
Hooray. America for me. Thanks. I hate it, but I love it, but I hate it.
Super
anyway.
Colonizer. Here's just like a gift of America. But because sports in the U.S. are so deeply tied to religion. That's true elsewhere. And I thought for a minute about going full Premier League on you, but I thought, you know what? Megan cannot talk soccer.
I mean, I can a little. I knew Premier League was soccer for starters. Thanks, Ted Lasso.
Yeah, exactly. That's because of
Ted Lasso. Yeah, that's correct.
Anyway, sports include so many ways for us to think about religion, number one. And number two, sports in the USA are absolutely, and I would argue almost inextricably tied to religion and religious practice, shocking no one, white Christianities. But we're going to talk more about that, I guess, right now.
Right now. You are so excited to talk about a sports. Okay, you know what? Good. Let's just do it. Okay, so
you know what? I almost put on my like Adidas tracksuit for this recording, but it's like 90 degrees in Vermont right now and I'm too sweaty.
Please do take a picture of it when the episode comes out, though, so that I can use it for our video bite, because I think that's important.
Just looking straight, jurors.
Yeah. I'm going to need you to like really crunch up the curls, like shiny, like do it.
Yeah. Okay. I do. I have a gel that would do that work for us.
Yes. Excellent. Good. Thank you. Okay. Religion and sports. Hey. What's that all about?
So, Goodwin, when I teach religion, and frankly, as we write our book, Religion Isn't Done With You, I actually think a lot about sports. And I know it bothers you because I'm always doing like sports metaphors and you're like, Elise, I'm a theater kid. Can you make this theatery? And I'm like, I guess, but also it's really about sports.
Scoreboard! Scoreboard!
It's always about scoreboard. Friends, I have a scoreboard that Megan got me literally behind my desk at all times where I keep track of the wins because I fucking love sports. And more specifically, I actually find that sports are a great way to get folks to think about religion, how religion is everywhere, and how we're socialized to both see and not see religion in our daily lives.
Yeah, I do not sports generally. I don't. That's not a thing that I do. Martial arts, not really a sport. But since you and sister of the pod, Kathleen Murray Foodie, have been in my life, I I make an effort. I try in the same way that, like, I know that you all don't care about, well, like fucking dragons in the way that I do, but you humor me. And so I have learned the bare minimum about sport. So when you are saying that sports and religion go together, are you meaning that, like, baseball and soccer are religion? Because that seems not right, but you're smart, so help me.
I don't mean that. No.
Okay.
But I do mean that we can see a ton of similarities in how groups work, how definitions work, how rituals work, how participation works, how sacred space works in sports broadly. Lots of people would also say we can see a lot of religion happening in sports from the wee little guys all the way up till the professionals.
Okay. All right. Walk me through it.
As you know, lots of people think that you and I are being too aggressive when we say religion isn't done with you. And then we title our book that.
I mean, I get that a lot, regardless of what I'm titling my book. But yeah, yes, they do think it's scary to say religion isn't done with you, because what if you'd like to be done with religion? Too bad, nerds. Sorry.
Yeah. And so let's explain it using the sports balls. For me as a treat for me.
All right. You may have little a sport as a treat.
Okay. I'm going to set this in Boston because I know that you know Boston better.
I do.
And since you grew up in Philly, I'm afraid that if I said it in New York, some inner Philly Irish nonsense hooligan will come out and try to kill me, because Philly and New York, famous rivalry in some sports. New York and Boston, another famous rivalry in some sports. Everyone jealous. New York is the better of the all.
I don't
all.
Think anybody's jealous of New York because it sucks. It sucks.
Keeps winning championship though. So in the spirit of shitting on teams that I hate, let's talk about the Red Sox.
Which is fun for me because in as far as I have ever given even a quarter of a turd about sports, it was the Boston Red Sox that I cared about.
I mean, I want to say at the jump that I grew up rooting for the Yankees, but only because Doc Gooden broke my heart because he used to play for the Mets. And when it came out that he was on drugs and I was in the midst of Nancy Reagan's Say No to Drugs, yeah. I was so disappointed in my favorite pitcher on my favorite team that I switched allegiances and joined my dad's longstanding Yankees fandom. And so that's how I became a Yankees fan.
Yeah, but I mean, Johnny Damon got me off baseball pretty much forever. He left for some fucking team in New York, who can say which one. And I haven't cared about baseball since, to be honest.
Well, we have really strong feelings about sports, even though we don't play for that team and don't know how to throw a ball. It's almost like it's a good metaphor for something. So let's take these Red Sox, because you and I have actually both lived in Boston. So I think this is a good place because we can talk about how religion isn't done with us, even though we're in some ways done with it. Regardless of how many times they win or break Babe Ruth's curse, fucking Boston fans are the goddamn worst. And I say that to you, a Philadelphia person, who are second worst.
Yeah. That's accurate.
Like right now, the last time I checked the scoreboards, I think the Sox are trailing New York by 17 games, but I was watching the New York Boston game and everyone's like screaming the Yankees suck. And it's like, dude, you're nearly 20 games behind. Like, you are just, facts don't matter. Just like how miracles are real, right? Sports, religion, we're in it.
No, the Yankees sucking is an ontological fact. That's not about math. That's just who they are.
Again, I want us to think about why ontologies are a way that we think about sports. So, as we both know from having lived in Boston, it doesn't actually matter if I don't care about baseball broadly or if I don't care about the Sox at all, because on a game day, the trains are going to be late.
Yep.
Traffic will be fucked. I will definitely get attacked in 2006 for wearing a New York hat on the orange line of the T at 8:30 a.m. on the way to the Haymarket on a Saturday to buy like dollar for 10 limes.
Hondo P. Yeah.
Is a thing that happened. Like a man screamed at me using Christian obscenities. It was really weird. He called Kevin a young snake and then tried to give us the Bible all because I was wearing a Yankees hat. It was dope as fuck. But that's a thing that will happen even though I don't care. And I was really just wearing that because if you know about Boston summers, it's real humid. And if you've seen my hair, it's real big and I didn't have stuff in it and it just needed to go under a hat. This was not an ontological, philosophical or ideological choice. It was just a poor choice. And I got yelled at by a subway preacher.
Checks out.
We also know, having lived in Boston, that there are correct reds and navies and incorrect navy blues to wear. We also know that there's, I would say, like a social pressure of people of a certain age and class and probably race to see a game at Fenway because it is hallowed ground.
Yep. I will also say, because I know how much you love calendars, if you are a person who teaches in Boston and you're expecting most of your class to show up on opening day, you are a fool. Like, baseball structures time. It also structures the the landscape of Boston. If you know Boston, you know that there is a weather pole on the top of I forget which building, which is supposed to tell you what the weather's like, but sometimes also it tells you if games have been canceled. So,
you're welcome. Well, that is the weather. Like, that is the temperature of the city.
Brace yourselves. Yeah.
So what I'm saying is that living in Boston, we learned that there was a social capital for understanding this particular sport, or at least for not saying, this is stupid. Why is sports? And I'll also say, having lived in Boston, there are moments where it's dangerous not to understand. Like, have you, Megan, for real, have you ever been on the drunk train after a game accidentally?
It's bad. It's bad. And the thing is it, like, it doesn't matter whether they lost or they won. Neither of those makes a train a safe place to be.
No, because Boston fans will riot for wins and riot for losses. They are fucking unruly.
Correct. That's correct.
Have you ever been out, like just out at night after a particularly bad loss that had that group of Red Sox wearing white dudes walk by?
Yeah, I lived in Kenmore Square for the first 4 years. Lived in Boston. Yeah, like this was, if you don't know Boston, I could throw a rock. Well, I couldn't, but someone who was good at throwing rocks could throw a rock from Kenmore Square and hit Fenway. So yeah, yes, I'm very, very familiar with this charged atmosphere.
Yeah, I once was at a bar and I watched a man punch a lamp and cut his whole hand like a bloody mess because Noma did a winning play. This was like a win. And this dude just broke his fucking hand because good play. All of which is to say, it doesn't actually matter if I care about the sports ball or if I was watching that game on the TV. The sports ball is doing the work here.
So in much the same way, we see religion doing work on the world and on us, whether we care about it or not. Sports operates in similar ways. It does work whether we are personally invested in it or not. Okay, this metaphor works for me. Okay, all right.
That's exactly right. And we've been focusing on, you know, the violent temperament of Boston fans, but we could also talk about the moments of exuberance and community in wins and in losses.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So like there are countless examples of when your team wins. Freaking out, feeling excited, hugging the dude next to you, or crying and losing, and people are just like their whole lives are over.
Yeah. I got full on kissed by a stranger when.
Ooh la la.
Yeah. I was at a bar when the Boston Red Sox came back after we thought they were going to be out. It was actually the year that they won, and it was a big deal. And yeah, random dude smooching me. I'm sorry, he was hot. But yeah, that was surprising. It's also, yeah, it's just constant. Like the year that the Patriots won the Super Bowl, which would have been 2002.
They've won a number of Super Bowls. So.
Yeah, but this was a big thing because they hadn't won in a while or something. It might have been Tom Brady. I don't fucking know. But it was striking to me because...
I love when you try. It's very sweet.
Thank you. I know it's important to you. Not Tom Brady, but sports in general.
No, I hate football.
Yeah, no, fuck football. But the Patriots, which is a football team, I know that, won the Super Bowl, which is a big deal, I'm given to understand.
Yes.
The chanting that happened in Boston, where I was Yankees suck. That's not even the same sport.
It doesn't need to be the same sport because, again, it's a prayer, right? Like, it is just an anthem. It's a prayer.
It is.
Yeah. It's the thing you say when someone sneezes. It's knee jerk. It doesn't even have to have intentionality. It's just true. You are doing my work for me.
It's true.
Baruch Hashem, Megan.
I still have that reaction when I see Yankees hats out in public. I live in Maine where we have very few sports and I don't care about baseball, but the Yankees, I know in my soul, they suck.
But those moments of exuberance and community in that, where people are coming together, making out with your face consensually or not, I hope consensually,
eventually.
When people are excited, when people are really reveling, there's an importance to that. People describe it as having been there. People think about it in terms of place and time and fluency. It is usually more meaningful for folks to win a championship or a playoff. in a home stadium as opposed to an away stadium, right?
Yeah. There is an effervescence to it.
There's an effervescence, which if you hear us nerds, you hear us seating what's coming next. But there's also these in-stadium rituals, which as a nerd, I fucking love the most, right? So I'm going to do the Boston ones, but we could do this for any stadium, right? Like being a fan and being able to touch the Green Monster, signing Pesky's pole if you happen to sit out on the third baseline, hating the Yankees and yelling Yankees suck, regardless of the season or time or factual facts of that, singing Sweet Caroline in the eighth, which like, all right, I guess if Jewish Elvis is going to be your thing, go for it. There are all these things that require specific knowledge. They require teaching, right? Like you don't just learn, like you don't just show up in Fenway and they don't give you like a little, like a map or like a program that's like, hey, in the eighth inning, we're going to take a break to sing Sweet Caroline. Here are the lyrics.
You turn your hymnals to the page.
Right. Exactly. You'd think they would do that, but they don't. And so how do you learn that that's what you do? How do you create that community of transmission and tradition? So
people do it.
People do it. And they do it in similar ways to the ways that we see people creating community rituals, traditions, and superstitions. And I'm using superstitions in a broad sense around religion, right? It's the way that like my dad used to wear the same shirt to watch the sports play, even though like you're at home, they can't see you through the WPIX Channel 11 broadcast of the Yankees on like a Saturday in 1987, dad. And you're not part of the team, but somehow that belief that me wearing my lucky shirt will make sure that the guys win is about belonging. It's about community, but it's also about just straight up ritual. Mm-hmm. So, are you ready to help me break down the actual theories that I've been teasing out with my very grumpy foray into the Boston Red Sox?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, I am. Because I love theory, even though I'm grumpy about sports.
Okay. So, you already said collective effervescence.
I did.
We are going to cite that that's our boy, Durkheim.
Is.
Megan, what is collective effervescence? Who is Durkheim? Why are we citing that? What does that matter?
Okay, so if we're thinking about collective effervescence, we are thinking about a mood, right? Created together that helps you think about the world, that makes meaning of your experiences together. And Emil Durkheim gives us the sociology of religion and says, hey, what if it's less important what you believe and more important what y'all do when you come together?
That's exactly right. So thanks. In the primary sources, we once took a group of kids. I was a camp counselor. We took a group of kids to Boston. We took a group of kids to Boston. And among many other stupid things we did, we took them to a Sox game. They're a bunch of kids from the New York tri-state area. So they're all wearing Yankees hats and Mets hats. No. And we sit behind the Green Monster and they are harassing the center fielder of the Toronto Blue Jays. And they are just screaming obscenities. It's like fucking, it's incredible. But when all these like, you know, stadium things happen, right? Like when the wave happens, when Sweet Caroline comes on, these Yankees fans who are doing their most to make it dangerous for the 19-year-olds in charge to leave the stadium, they're singing along. So collective effervescence doesn't mean that you believe in the thing or that you're even happy to be there. It really just means you're participating and kind of getting swept up in that affective, emotional experience.
Well, and that affective emotional experience does something to you that you might not be able to anticipate, right? It creates change in the space, but can also create change in you. And there isn't always a way to anticipate what that's going to do until you're in it.
That's right.
When people say you have to have been there, like, yeah, man, if you were not out someplace watching the Sox win for the first time in I don't know how many decades because I don't actually care about sports, you have to have been there. It does something. And the folks who were there shared that experience and that experience lives in their bodies.
Yeah. So theorist number one at Play in Sports, Durkheim for us. All right. So we did Durkheim. I want to think about policing, disciplining, making sure that everybody is following the rules, which I know is, I guess, our boy Foucault. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking about Foucault when I was thinking about like not wearing the wrong colors on the train, learning that my Yankees hat needed to stay at home and I needed to wear my like Blue Real Day Camp Watermelon League baseball hat out, which is just a joke for Dina Goodman. And then I'm thinking about all of those kinds of policing where veering off of the expectation means that you will have some kind of social sanctioning. But how might you explain that differently than me? Or did I do that right?
No, I think you did it right. But I think the part that we want to emphasize is that there's not a cop of the Red Sox on the train in the morning saying that is the wrong navy blue. What you have are fucking weirdos who are going to give you shit. And so you internalize that it is not safe to do it wrong. And you discipline your body and your behaviors to do it, quote unquote, right. So when we're talking about discipline or policing in the context of Foucault, we're thinking about not explicit systems, not like, oh my God, the cops are going to come get me because I wore the wrong shirt on the tee. They'll come and get you for other things. But anyway, fuck the police. But what we're thinking about here is the way that we internalize collective agreements and commitments, whether we want to or not, because that's what is required of us to move safely and somewhat freely through these spaces.
Yeah. All right. And the last thing I think is at play here in our little foray into sports is ritual theory, like our girl Catherine Bell.
Yes.
Tell me that.
Okay, great.
Tell me that. So erudite.
How do ritual work?
How do ritual go?
Go. So the thing that I always emphasize with Catherine Bell is that I think for folks for whom religion equals belief, they assume that ritual equals acting out belief. And Catherine Bell says, nah, actually, ritual does things to our bodies regardless of what we believe. We can participate in rituals whether or not we believe in a specific religious tradition or a particular, I don't know, theological or philosophical tenet. And that we can't always know ahead of time what doing those things will do to us in our brains and our bodies. So it is possible, and Sabah Mahmood does a lot here as well, right? It is possible to participate in ritual and find yourself changed. Find yourself maybe believing or investing in ways of thinking or believing or worldviews that were not meaningful for you before. But because you've done it and you've done it with other people, it becomes meaningful. It becomes a way of participating in community. It becomes a new way of being in the world. Did I get it?
So I know we've been in Boston this whole time and that we've been, you know, giving you the entirety of the United States. But I wanted to talk really quickly before we peace out of this episode about the specific connection between sports and religion, not just like religious theory and how we might use sports to think about religion not being done with us, but also how sports in the US is like expressly religious often. I'm thinking here about muscular Christianity and the YMCA and the establishment of those buildings as a literal way to discipline Christian bodies, Christian male bodies, into being weapons.
For Christ, but also nation.
For Christ and nation. So if you don't like that, tough shenu news, that is exactly what that history is. But I am also thinking of the Supreme Court case that came down in June, late June, about prayer on the high school football team, where a high school football coach in, I think it was like Bremerton High School, said, I can pray at the 50-yard line and all my players are welcome to join me. And everyone was like, nah, you're like hired by the public school. That's probably not acceptable. And the Supreme Court, being a theocratic nonsense organization that it is, ruled 6-3 for the coach, saying that they needed to balance the religious and free speech rights of the teachers and coaches with the rights of students not to feel pressured into participating in religious practices. And even though the coach dominates playing time, who starts, whether or not you make the team, whether or not your siblings come in after you make the team, et cetera, et cetera.
Potentially your access to like college, because if you're playing at a certain level,
100%, maybe,
right? Like, so this isn't just about a game.
The Supreme Court, in its theocratic wisdom, said, no, the coach can pray and students can say no, which, having played on many teams, some of which had prayer and some of which didn't, that is fucking bullshit. And the stupidest thing I've ever seen, and a major erosion of the First Amendment. But I bring this up to say that the idea that the coach needs to pray with his high school public football team for a win is some American sports. Not just American religion, that is American sports,
yeah,
right? years ago, we didn't care when like Tim Tebow would take a knee in the end zone because it meant he won. But when Colin Kaepernick takes a knee, it's not about prayer. It's about protest. And therefore it is shunned. So this idea of correct religion happening on the field is one that is like deeply imbricated in American sports, particularly professional sports. But we see it filtering down through the lower levels.
We absolutely do. It's also a space where we see negotiations around whose body is acceptable to play sports and whose isn't, right? So if you are an observant Muslim woman and you express that through pious fashion, if you want to cover your head while you're playing, there are a lot of places where that can't happen, or a lot of places where it has taken a bunch of community activism and struggle and frankly legal battles to say like, yeah, you can cover your head. This affects sick players who wear turbans as well, right? Like that has been a struggle. So the assumption that bodies should not be marked religiously, except that it seems to be fine to wear your crucifix while you're playing.
Yeah, because it's not a safety issue, because it's under your jersey. No one can pull that and hurt your neck. But a hijab, well, someone's gonna pull it off, and like, which is already an illegal play, regardless of what sport you're playing. So I never understood this logic. It's just hateful.
It is just hateful. It is a way that we tell folks who are not Christian and who want to wear their religious commitments on their bodies that they don't actually fit in this thing that we have decided is quintessentially American, which is woof, that is some shit. But I also, I'm going to do a thing, Elise, and I want you to brace yourself for it because I don't think you're ready. Take a deep breath. Good Foley work. I'm both going to know a thing about sports and I'm going to say something nice about it. You ready?
What the fuck?
I know. Here's what I'm going to say. For some people, sport can also be religion. And this isn't me being like, yes, the Boston Red Sox. Although, again, I think as this episode has laid bare, I have some weirdly residual, one might say survival level feelings about the Sox. No, what I'm talking about specifically is the Haudenosaunee and historically were called the Iroquois, but that's a French name. So they call themselves the Haudenosaunee. So that's the name we use. Lacrosse is a sacred sport. So there are sports that are sacred to some folks. And the co-option of lacrosse in and around both the United States and the world without accounting for its Haudenosaunee roots, and frankly, without often making space for Haudenosaunee players, is messed up. But there has been some movement to both acknowledge the debt that all people who play lacrosse owe to the Haudenosaunee and to make more space for the Haudenosaunee to play lacrosse as a sacred undertaking as well as a sport undertaking. Those things are not separate. So that is, I think, nice.
I love that. That's perfect. All right. You know what? I think we've said enough because we could keep going forever. And I think there's loads to say, but the takeaways are religion in the U.S. is often expressed through sports, and sports in the U.S. are exceptionally religious, particularly Christian. But also sports gives us a really interesting way to think about religious theory. And I encourage you to send us some examples of how that might be played out in other places.
Yes. From what I understand, a lot of people care deeply about both religion and sports. So more to learn here for me. Hooray. But let's not pack up your stuff yet, nerds. You have homework.
Homework? What homework?
So I've got Rebecca Alpert, who very, very famously has a lot of books on religion and sports. One of them is called Religion and Sports, An Introduction and Case Studies. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Alpert is also a rabbi and an avid baseball fan. So
she's fun.
It's just fun. Yeah.
She has a co-edited book, Rebecca Alpert does, with Art Remillard, called God, Games, and Globalization, New Perspectives on Religion and Sports. Tara Magdalinsky and Timothy John Lindsay Chandler have a book called With God on Their Side, Sport in the Service of Religion, which is really good.
And open access, apparently. That's cool.
Yeah. Nice. It's a really good book. And then Laurent Dubois, who is at Soccer Politics on Twitter, has a ton of work on how soccer and politics go together. And there's some religion to be had in there too, though that's not his express focus. Super recommend Soccer Empire, the World Cup and the Future of France. It is all about nationalism, soccer, and like religious and racial belonging. Mm. And then he also has a book called The Language of the Game, How to Understand Soccer. And now he is not phrasing this in expressly religious terms, but there's a whole chapter on ritual. So religion nerds, do your worst. And then fellow UNC alum Annie Blazer wrote a book called Playing for God, Evangelical Women and the Unintended Consequences of Sports Ministry, which is quite excellent. So I recommend all of those things.
You're reading this and I just remembered that I actually remember when I taught the religion and sports class online because Annie had designed it. I completely blacked that. Like I blacked it out like it was a trauma to me. Wow. Wow. Anyway.
Frankly, it's a trauma to me that you got to teach that course. So I'm going to just let that sit and say instead, shout out to Evie Wolf, Rachel Zeef, and Juliana Finch, the KI101 team, whose works make this pod accessible and therefore awesome, listenable, social media-able, among many other things for which we are grateful. Mm-hmm.
You can find Megan, that's me, on Twitter at MPGPHD, Annalise at PROFIRMF, or the show at KeepingIt_101. Find the website at KeepingIt101.com. Peep the Insta if you want to. And now we're on TikTok, apparently. Drop us a rating or review in your podcatcher of choice. And with that,
peace out, nerds.
And do your homework. It's on the syllabus.
Sports. I love sports.
So I've been hearing this phrase y'all got over here that I ain't too crazy about. It's the hope that kills you. Y'all know that? Yeah. I disagree, you know? I think it's the lack of hope that comes and gets you. See, I believe in hope. I believe in belief. Now, where I'm from, we got a saying too. Yeah? Question, actually. Do you believe in miracles? Now, I don't need y'all to answer that question for me. But I do want you to answer that question for yourselves. Right now. Do you believe in miracles? And if you do, then I want y'all to circle up with me right now. Come on, let's go.